The expressed views of the guests on this podcast are theirs alone and not necessarily endorsed by the host, TWBC, or any associated sponsor. Conversations that are robust yet balanced, on point and to the point. You are listening to the talk of tournament water skiing. This is the TWBC podcast. And now, here's your host, Tony Lightfoot.
Well, greetings one and all, and welcome to this two-part episode of the TWBC podcast. We continue with my conversation with Freddie Krueger and Karen Truelove with more great tales from their storied careers as tournament water ski athletes. So with that, let's continue on to the second and final episode. Enjoy. Yeah, we touched upon the injuries, and we've fully documented Karen's spader injuries, but we hadn't really dealt so far with you on an expansive type deal with your injuries. Now, you mentioned one of the last comments, you mentioned the crash that you took ski flying, which could have been the career ender for a lot of other competitors. Now, you're still upright, you're still skiing after something like that. I mean, what were some of the major knocks that you've taken throughout the years?
The probably the worst, I would say, you know, my injuries have tended to be a little more what I would say kind of as a nagging injury, where, you know, in 2015, we did the ski fly, the world record throwdown event with ESPN. And training for that and leading up into that, I developed some patella tendonitis, went right from the 312 world record and turned around and went over to England and got used to jumping 6 foot again, which seemed to aggravate it almost worse. Kind of finished out the season and ended up deciding not to go to the, I believe that was the Mexico Worlds that we didn't go to. And that was just from that nagging injury. 17 was probably the worst injury I had. And that was the crash at the Masters, which ironically was the first jump I think I crashed on, first or second jump. And I knew I was hurt, but I didn't know how bad, and I had the adrenaline going. And, you know, it's kind of like Travis Pastrana always said, you know, if you think you're hurt, hurry up and go before the swelling, you know, really kicks in, you know. And so I took another jump, and that was the jump that put me into the finals. And I remember on that landing, you know, kind of feeling something else give on the landing, and ended up later finding out that it was a torn ab muscle, a strained groin, but the worst of it was a strained pubic symphysis, which is in the front of your pelvis. Your pelvis is actually in two pieces. Uh-huh. And in the front of the pelvis, there's like a what do they call it? Like for a saddle horn, they'll call it, like you'd have on a horse saddle. Uh-huh. There's bone that sticks up, and there's a ligament or a tendon that goes around, wraps around that, and helps hold everything tight. So when you walk, your pelvis can move a little bit, but that tendon keeps everything tight, which in essence holds all your intestines and your pelvic floor. That, you know, they talk about pelvic floor with women a lot. Well, I strained that. And that Sunday morning, I remember trying to decide if I was going to be able to jump or not. And I remember telling Karen, I'm like, there's no way. Like I said, when I take a step, when I step wrong, I can feel my intestines and that moving, like something's not right. And so I pulled out, came home, went and saw a orthopedic here in the area. And, you know, that became the diagnosis. And it was ironic because he was what, 75 years old, been practicing medicine for, you know, 50 years. And he said it was only the second time he'd ever seen a pubic symphysis event like this. And the other time was from a car accident, which, you know, kind of makes sense. But I was really surprised that, you know, this is only the second time in 50 years this guy had come across, obviously, what was a very unique injury. And so, unfortunately, the flip side of that, when it's a, you know, when it's an ACL, you know, okay, hey, they're going to go in, they're going to repair it. You need to give it this long for the bone to heal. You need this much time for the blood supply to get back to the new ligament there. And then you're going to start your rehab. And then in, you know, 4 months, you'll be able to get back on the water. You've got these time frames. Well, with this thing, it was just a, we have no idea. So I was going to therapy and it felt better. It didn't feel better, but there was this constant kind of elephant in the room that if I did it again, if I crashed again, if I got injured, then if I tore it, that would be a career ending type scenario. So, ironically, that year was kind of the first year where we finished with the Masters, and then we didn't have another event until I think the Worlds that year was in France, was maybe in September. So we had one event in Russia that I forgo. So I missed the Russian event and decided that, you know, Karen was going to the Worlds and, you know, I was going to go regardless. And I wouldn't say I had doctor's clearance to go, but decided, yeah, I'm going to try it. So I went over the jump maybe 3 or 4 sets before we went to Paris. In my mind thinking, well, it's Paris and it's, you know, it's a rowing, we'll get there and the conditions will be amazing. And then I get there and it's an absolute, excuse my French, shit show, with all, you know, just rollers and conditions. And, yeah, you know, the tournament was over for everybody else. And then we had the men's jump prelims, you know, it's just one thing after another. But that was probably the scariest injury I had. The rest of it has been, you know, hey, I, you know, 97 Worlds in Colombia, you know, I separated some ribs. You know, that took forever, but it was, you know, it was the end of the season. They healed up. It's not that big a deal. Bone bruise in my left knee in 02. That one scared me because it took, I mean, that one never really seemed like it would heal up. It would get better and then I'd start jumping again and then I'd ding it again. And it was just this nagging thing. Knock on wood, I've never, I'm the one that's supposed to be doing the really dangerous event, you know, and she's had, you know, of course hers were jumping. Yeah, that's a good point. But, you know, she's had both knees, 2 C-sections, the neck. We didn't even refer to the neck, you know, the neck injury here she had a couple of years ago with herniated disc and that. I've been very fortunate. Ironically, have crashed. You know, there's that statistic about I've got more 230-foot jumps than the rest of the guys combined. I also have more crashes than all everybody else combined. So it's not from, you know, a lack of crashing. Just good luck, I guess.
Okay, tell us a little about the stress and strain that y'all have to put up with nowadays, you know, because I mean both of you are in your late 40s. You've had fantastic careers, you know, highly storied careers, and now you've each got competition that is far younger. They've probably had their share of injuries as well, but they have access to, you know, to better medicine right from the get-go, you know. So tell us about what you do so far as conditioning and stuff of that nature to basically stay upright on the water, Karen.
I mean, it's still a work in progress. I don't have a formula that I'm completely sold on yet. I think a lot of it is I do think I have good genetics. I mean, I've had a lot of injuries, but I think I've also had the ability to come back from them, you know, fairly successfully. I'm very appreciative of what my body's been, you know, has allowed me to do over the years. But, we certainly try to be aware more than ever about, you know, how we eat and how, you know, how much sleep we are getting. I mean, after kids, you really, you know, you really realize like how important that sleep is. The workouts, I've always worked out. We just kind of keep shuffling around different things that we try. And, you know, sometimes it's, a little bit more cardio based and, you know, sometimes it's more weight based. I mean, mobility, you know, all the things that, you know, everybody sees these days that's, you know, out there. But I mean, I think we also just try to stay, you know, give us something that we are, that's motivating and, you know, something that we find, you know, enjoyable. We try to do it together. You know, and I mean, it is definitely always, at least in the back of my mind, you know, I'm always thinking, okay, hey, how can this benefit me through, you know, for my skiing? You know, and I think that's something that, you know, I do wonder, like, if I wasn't thinking about it in terms of that, like, what type of workouts would I do? Or, you know, what would my mental, you know, approach be to some of these workouts? But, you know, I don't know. What would you say, Freddie?
Well,
I can't imagine either of you two playing pickleball with each other. But but Freddie, where does your fountain of youth come from?
Karen. Yeah. The workouts in that is, I always refer to Karen as the researcher in the family. So we've, you know, quite honestly, she has guided us through the path of the different trainers and the different people that we've worked with over the years. You know, she's the one that's in charge of how we're eating and, you know, what we're eating. And I always, you know, again, with our kids, we refer to it as, if you know better, you do better, because you don't want to be the kind of person that, well, I know this is bad for me, but I'm going to do it anyway. Or, you know, and so, like Karen said, so much of every aspect of our life gets dictated by, you know, skiing or the next tournament or training, you know. So we joke that, like, okay, hey, we are getting to an age where, you know, it's going to be nice to go out with friends and not have to feel guilty if we want to have a beer or some wine or, you know, eat the extra dessert or whatever, because for 28, 30, 35, 40 years, whatever it's been, of feeling like we're sacrificing and trying not to cross a line that we can't get back from, you know, we're kind of, I guess you're kind of looking over that green grass on the other side of the fence thinking, you know, well, I'm looking forward to that as well someday. But I think the main thing is a spirit of competing, which is kind of a funny thing, you know, with kids, again, going to, you know, the YMCA and playing basketball and watching, you know, that they don't keep score, right? Well, we do. You know, I can tell you
exactly.
I
have an app on my phone.
Yeah, Karen's got an app on her phone, and Dash is keeping stats, you know, and Ridge is playing games and vice versa. But it's, you know, if you think about life in general, you know, when you go to school and you're getting A's and somebody else is getting B's and C's, like, you're competing with the kids in your class, the kids in your school, the kids in the state, the kids in the country. You're competing for scholarships. You're like, we have this tendency to shy away from that idea that we're going to compete for something. And I think what we're missing there is that, you know, we don't want to raise poor sports, but we do want to raise young people that are competing for things. And I mean, at the end of the day, all you have to do is, you know, I'm here on Lake Huckleberry a lot of days all by myself. All you got to do is, you know, drop off a Taylor Garcia here or a Joel Poland or, you know, Bruce Neville or Scott Ellis. They come and ski here, and all of a sudden, you know, I'm winding into a different gear because every you know, I'm competing with them every day in my mind, but when they're physically here, oh boy, you know. So and you turn that up, and that's what, you know, I think that's again from our youth and from our early beginnings. Karen had that with April, and, you know, Christy being from North Carolina, and you're hearing about these people, and you're, you know, maybe you're competing with them that weekend at a facility, or maybe you're competing against something, you know, there at the U.S. Masters that you didn't qualify. So you went to Charleston and you're saying, hey, I gotta beat them by three buoys to be competitive or whatever. Like, we're constantly living that world. And so to me, that fountain of youth that people are wondering about or referring to is, it's a healthy dose of competition in everything we do.
Yeah, that competitive drive, you know, that just keeps things interesting and alive, you know, and just gives you that.
And for sure, you get to a point, you know, and again, I think in the most Zen, you know, form of it, you're competing against yourself. Mm-hmm. Right? Like, that's the, you know, that's the goal. And as you do get to an age and you start to bring in some of these, you know, Nate Smiths and Reginas and, you know, and people that are consistently running scores that, you know, you might look at and go, you know, am I really competing against that or not? Well, then all of a sudden you start this transition of, you know, hey, I'm, you know, I mean, when Karen was, I want to go ahead and say her age. When Karen was 48, you know, she ran 3:39 and set a record. You know, now when she at 49 this year, she tied that record and she's going to want to beat that record. And, you know, so what are you doing is you're competing against, you know, age and, you know, yourself and your youth and, you know, like there's this constant. So to me, that's what keeps it interesting and keeps it fun. And, you know, countless parents have come to us and said, you know, hey, I'm skiing with my little Janie or little Bobby. And, you know, can you go talk to them and motivate them? And, you know, I always tell them, hey, if I have to motivate your child, it's not going to work. You know, they've got to be motivated. I can't motivate them for them. You know what I mean? And so as a parent, I think you're always looking at that. What motivates my child, right? Like, is it, you know, if your kid's crazy about video games and he's not behaving, what do? You know, you don't take away the broccoli.
No.
You take away the video games, right? Like so we're always and constantly using those motivations and that. And again, I think the cool thing is if you really start to look at it and start to understand how the competition works, whether it is with yourself or your peers or the peers of your children's peers, whatever, you know, you start to understand like that is a driving force to keep you motivated.
Indeed, indeed. Now, the next thing that I was going to go and touch upon is your involvement with your sponsors, how deep that goes, you know, Mastercraft and OJ Props and the rest of them. But you touched upon competition, and there are two people in your family that are natural competition for them between themselves. When I watched and saw the final cut of the unknown sport of water skiing, you could just tell that between those two they were helping each other, but they just couldn't wait to get out in the water and just get after it and get after each other.
I mean, yeah, I agree. I think there's a natural, I mean, you know, I think you, I mean, I would say you see it in boys, but I, you know, I also feel like you see it in girls, but just, you know, being brother, just kind of that brotherly competition. And, you know, going back to what you're asking about, why are we still doing this? I know for me personally, these last few years, it's been very clear in my mind that one of the reasons I continue to do it is I want them to have an opportunity to see me compete. You know, I don't know how much longer I'll be, you know, able to, you know, continue to, you know, go to the pro tournaments and things like that.
Because not many kids have that luxury, right?
Right. You know, and I had kids. You would say, I mean, certainly for the time. I mean, I had kids late. You know, so. I mean, it is, you know, now that they're a little bit older, they kind of know more about what's going on. They, you know, more versed in skiing. I mean, I definitely want them to be able to be a witness to it instead of just hearing about it later, you know, oh yeah, your parents used to do this and see some pictures or, you know, a YouTube video or whatever. I want them to actually be able to experience it along with us. And I mean, it's been an inspiration for me, you know, to watch them, learn about skiing and competing and seeing how much effort they put into it. You know, it takes me back to like the essence of why, you know, why I got started, or, you know, just the purity, you know, of it all. Cause I mean, there's so much stuff to distract you and, you know, what's my why and is this all worth it? You know? And then if I just look at, you know, just the simple, you know, simple aspects of skiing and why we're all drawn to it. And, you know, I mean, if I go over and ask them, why do they do it? I don't know that they'll have a great answer, but I can see it in them. And I actually draw from that energy a lot of times when I'm struggling, you know, I want to be a good example, you know, for them. I want to, you know, I try to tell them, hey, this is what you know, when you're not having a great day or things just don't seem to be going well, you know, this is how you're supposed to, you know, approach it. And, you know, boy, do I hear my own voice in my head a lot. And I try to act on that. So,
but to Karen's point, like wanting to be a good example, for a parent that's standing on the side of a basketball court or a soccer field or whatever, telling their kid what they should do and how hard they should work or whatever, it's, you know, that's good. You're trying to help your kid be better. When you're dragging your kids to the gym and setting them in the corner and saying, okay, listen, you know, these guys don't have daycare, so you just have to sit here for the next, you know, hour and a half. Don't move. You know, you can play on your iPad or whatever. Just kind of look up from time to time. And when they look up and they see Karen and I working and sweating and, you know, getting in the car and you're driving home and you know, you're talking about, okay, this is what we're going to have for dinner because, you know, we're running late or whatever, you know, like I've always believed that actions are more important than words. So as she's saying, hopefully they're getting an opportunity to see through our actions that we're walking the walk and talking the talk kind of thing. That's, you know, that's our ideal goal for it. But, you know, the kids, they do compete against each other, but I think it's in a very healthy way. You know, in slalom, you know, Dash is now going to be going 36 and Ridge is still at 30, but they're kind of competing at rope lengths. So, you know, they trash talk a little bit. But, you know, Ridge was actually the first one to go over the top of the ramp. He went over the top of the ramp before Dash, and Dash is the 5 year older. And so Ridge has been a driving force, you know, when it comes to tricks. Ridge is driving that push a little bit more. And it would be so, so, so easy and simple for Dash to, you know, swipe it away or downplay it or be negative to it. And he is anything but. He is the most encouraging, the most, he is Ridge's biggest fan and vice versa. But, you know, that older sibling carries a tremendous amount of influence on the younger, right? Like it's just the way God made us. And I mean, Dash Kruger is an amazing big brother to Ridge. And I always tell him, you know, when somebody comes up to mom and I and, you know, talks about how funny Ridge is or how, you know, cute he is or how good of a skier he is or whatever, he's not complimenting just me and Karen. He's complimenting Dash too, because ever since Ridge has been mobile, wherever Dash is going, you know, Ridge is being influenced by him as much as anybody. So, you know, there's a tremendous amount of responsibility that comes with that. And we are very, you know, I don't want to say we're hard on Dash, but we're very strict, or, you know, whatever I'm looking for there, you know, helping him understand the responsibility of, you know, it's another set of eyes that are looking at him besides just, you know, Karen and I. It's Ridge too. And so the decisions he makes and the choices he makes not only affect his future, but Ridge's as well. And, you know, if you're going to give credit to, you know, a brother who is doing it right, man, Dash deserves it.
And how do their peers at their respective schools look? How do they look on them when they describe their experiences? No, I'm a ski jumper and that kind of stuff.
YouTube, baby. YouTube, TWBC. Like that is the gift that these kids have, because, you know, when I was in school and I would tell people what I would do, they just kind of look at you a little squinty eyed, kind of nod their head and go on, you know. These kids pull their phone out and they can pull up a video of, you know, hey, this is me at the Nationals, or this is me at the King of Darkness or whatever. And they're showing these videos and, you know, and you know, yeah, the kids get excited about it. And anybody that's never done it assumes it's easy, right? Like they have no idea the thousands of hours these kids have already put into it. So, you know, Ridge is always coming home and he's like, well, you know, Gee says that, you know, he can do what I can do. And I'm like, well, yeah, you're going to deal with some of that, you know, but no, I mean, when Ridge and Dash found out that, the Nationals was not going to be webcast this year, I thought they were just, they nearly cried, but I thought they were just going to say, hell with it, we're not going. I mean, it was literally that traumatic for them. Yes. For 3 days, they kept asking us, are you guys serious? Are you pulling our legs? I'm like, no, I'm serious. There's no webcast. So, I mean, you know, you talk about influences on the sport and in the future, boy, you guys are in it.
Okay. Your take on that, Karen?
About their peers
in school, you know, because, you know, you in school, in that kind of age, you're always trying to one-up each other, you know?
Yeah, I mean, well, you know, it is kind of our area is a little bit unique in the fact that we actually have the King of Darkness like is right here. So I guess you could say, you know, it's kind of an advantage that actually a lot of the kids attend the tournament. So they're familiar with it. They actually got to see them ski. So if they didn't, like Freddie said, you know, they could break out the TWBC. I mean, even the teachers have been, you know, gracious to like, hey, if you'll send us a clip or you'll send us like a video, we'll show it up on. I mean, they have all this fancy stuff these days, you know, like the smart screen, I think they call it in the classrooms.
Yeah, Promethean board.
Yeah, so, yeah, you know, you're a teacher, right? So, I mean, yeah, no, the peers are so important. And I think it's so cool that they get to, you know, I mean, it's kind of like, I mean, I felt this way. I'm sure you felt this way, Freddie. Like skiing is so, it's such a unique sport that when you say you're a water skier, everybody's ears kind of, you know, you kind of perk up like, well, either, you know, well, that's cool, or what's that, or tell me more, you know. If you say you play basketball or kind of the more common sports, you know, I feel like people are like, oh, yeah, I already know all about that, and I'm probably better than you anyway, you know. So they don't even, you know, they might not even go into conversation. But when you talk about skiing, it's like, oh, yeah, tell me more. So I feel like it's like almost like an avenue for conversation. And you know, a lot of the kids, they want to just come over and, you know, ride in the boat or, you know, play in the water or whatever. I mean, there's so many, go tubing or something. There's so many different, you know, so many things that it can lead to. And I think it you know, it's an opportunity to create relationships and things like that. I mean, we feel very fortunate.
All right. Equipment. I mean, between the two of you, you've cultivated sponsorships and partnerships with some of the world's, some of the industry's leaders, Mastercraft, Johnson Propellers. I mean, your respective ski companies, D3 and Good and what have you. Kind of take us down that road a little bit and tell us how you got involved with each of them. You know, what was kind of like the genesis and how important their sustained support has been over the years.
Well, Good guidance is a, you know, a big part, I think, of the path that we took. You know, when I was with Jay there at the ski school, there was, you know, a certain amount of companies and vendors that kind of would come through the ski school because at that time it was, you know, the world renowned ski school. And so, you know, when Perfect Pass was trying to figure out how to make the system work and make it feel good, you know, we had one of the very early versions there at Jay's that we, you know, tested, and we ran it for like 3 weeks, and Jay, you know, typed up reports and this is what we like and don't like and sent all that back. So, you know, watching and listening to guys like Jay, but I think Andy Mapple was probably the biggest influence.
Were you the guy behind the jump switch?
No, I didn't have anything to do with the development of Perfect Pass, other than trying to help, you know, Bruce Neville and again, the guys that were already down here, I would say in Central Florida, you know, Jay and John Gibbons, I think was there when we did that. They wrote up a great report that helped the Perfect Pass guys out. But in terms of, you know, the athletes at the time, the big pros that were giving the feedback, that would have been more of the Bruce Nevilles and Carls and Scotts and guys like that. When Zero Off came along, I did get involved with that very early, and did a tremendous amount of feedback in that. And ironically, the feedback was, let's go to the, you know, at that time, the knock on Perfect Pass was the bigger jumpers were being disadvantaged. And so the first thing we did was to sit down and figure out how to level that playing field. So I actually did an awful lot of just riding in the boat with the engineers, pulling guys like Scott and Kyle Eade and Sebastian DePasquale and the bigger jumpers of that time to get their feedback on what they felt, because we knew if it works for them, it'll work for the little guys. But kind of circling back to the Andy Mapple, you know, one of the fringe benefits, I guess, of you know, when we bought this place from Bruce and Tony was, Bruce and Tony had a friendship with Andy. He lived right here in Windermere. He was training on, you know, the Natural Lake Hancock, just a couple miles away. We were, you know, fortunate enough to get to know him. And I was never shy about just kind of splintering my way in there to, you know, again, to learn. I think Karen, the one thing that's helped Karen and I a lot is we were curious people. I want to know what, you know, I want to know what he's doing to make it work for him and how he thinks about things and how he approaches things. And Karen's, you know, obviously she's trying to break down how does he stand on that ski and why did he do that to his ski and why is the tip of the ski worn off? You know, like you're just natural curiosity. But we were able to foster enough of a relationship that I feel like Andy kind of took us under our wing. And I remember actually, you know, right here on our property, you know, sitting down and talking with him and him having conversations about as you're progressing along throughout your career with the companies, you want to be connecting and interweaving yourself into their engineering processes, their marketing processes in such a way that when times get tough and they've got to cut budgets or they're going to sit down and look at it and say, well, we can't get rid of, you know, Andy, or we can't get rid of Freddie, or we can't get rid of Karen because they do all these things for us. And I think, you know, he probably did a better job of that than anybody in the history of the sport, but he helped us enough that we took that same approach. And the way that you do that is, quite honestly, is you build relationships. Like you give more than you're getting. You know, they, in that contract, they expect you to do these things, and you then go above and beyond that, and you give them extra feedback. Hey, I heard somebody complaining about this. You know, let's talk, you know, what are we missing here? What can we do better there? And in doing that, ironically, I mean, I feel like some of our closest and best friends in the world ended up being these people that work in these companies and who have taken care of us. And, you know, we went through the 2008, 2009 financial crisis in this country. Mastercraft ended up basically furloughing was the term. You know, they laid off basically everybody in that company except for like 26 employees while they restructured and went through some things so they didn't have to do bankruptcy and that. But every single one of our other sponsors kept us and paid us through that time. And then as soon as Mastercraft got their restructure done, they came back, and they not only came back, they back paid us for that time that we missed. And they did that for I don't want to say all the athletes. They did that for, I'm going to say, most of the athletes. I think there were a couple of athletes that didn't make it through that time. And, you know, that just was part of the business. But the point is, you know, the relationships and where we've gotten are really about that, just the human response and the human relationship of understanding that these people are killing themselves to help us be better at what we want to be great at. And if we treat their companies the same way and we put in that same type of energy and effort to make their companies even more successful than they thought they could be, well, then, you know, rising tides raise all boats, right? Uh-huh. So, but I, hands down, you know, I think our parents have been amazing role models in terms of, you know, how you treat people. And you know, I always go back to our parents with different questions than that. But Andy Mapple deserves a tremendous mm-hmm. amount of credit for helping us understand, you know, how to move from athlete to what I would kind of call more of a corporate athlete.
Now, Karen, let's go to you in that respect. You know, with sponsors and that kind of stuff and industry. Now, I don't know whether it would be fair to say that within the sport or within sports in general, women athletes kind of get a raw deal. You know, in terms of the opportunities to earn, you know, a somewhat decent living within the sport. But I mean, for the sponsors that you have that have supported you over years, you know, kind of tell us how their involvement has helped you.
I mean, I actually, as far as like, I mean, my Mastercraft, I was with Mastercraft back. My dad was a promotional driver. You know, my family, we've always had Mastercraft.
Jack Truelove.
Yes. And so that's how, you know, growing up, I knew no other boat company. And then in 94, I believe, I finally got my own personal, you know, contract, you know, separate as my, you know, as my own, you know, my own.
He got the wakeboard boat.
Well, she was, actually, at the time, it was before he signed on.
So she was a year and a half before I signed on. So Karen's the veteran in that.
Feather in my cap there. But, So I you know, was technically signed on with them. You know, and then when that happens to you as a skier, especially, you know, back then, I mean, it was, to land a boat contract, you know, I mean, it instills like a level of confidence, like, hey, somebody, you know, believes in me right. enough to, you know, to support me and like give me a boat. And, you know, so I mean,
someone like a Sally Field, like saying, you really love me.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, that was like certainly a big supporting stepping stone for me.
But other than our ski contracts, which are separate. Everything else that we've ever done, I mean, when we were with, I won't mention the past wetsuit companies, everything that we've ever done, we have done together. It's kind of a package deal, right? And the reason for that is when I helped design the new Eagle jumpsuit, Karen was giving feedback. Right. Like she's involved in that process all the way along. Obviously, so are all the guys, you know, Randy and Russell and Bob and all those guys. But my point being, like, if I'm going to go work on something for Zero Off, I got to have a test dummy. Right. And, you know, and Karen's the test dummy. And I mean, and she's and the beautiful thing is none of the companies that we have worked with they've never hesitated, because if you have a 15-minute conversation with Karen, you understand very quickly she's 51% of the brains in this operation, right? Like they see that and they know that. So every contract that we've ever set up has always been under our corporation of TK Ski, with this knowing that, you know, hey, Freddie can help you, but you're going to make it a whole hell of a lot further with Freddie and Karen, with both of us working together. And a lot of times, we would do it almost like a 2-for-1, you know, like, hey, you'll get both of us, but you're only paying a little bit more, you know, kind of thing. But again, that's in the beginning. And then as the relationship grows, and you know, even, you know, I get a lot of the credit. I always kind of say, as far as TK Ski goes, or, you know, when people think about the things that we do with Mastercraft, OJ, Innovation Controls, I tend to be the mouthpiece. You know, I'm the one up here yapping. But they don't realize that, you know, Karen is again, she's 50% of all the work that's going into all this. So when we're doing the engineering, you know, I may be the kind of the point person for the communication of it, but then when we come back in and we've, you know, she's sitting there with me, helping me figure out like, hey, what do we do with this? If we change these variables, innovation, what are the downsides? What did we break? When we fix this, what did we break over here? And, you know, so there's, you know, to your point, I think if Karen had to go out on her own as a female and try to wedge in there, that would be harder. But it would be for me too, right? Like me by myself do I have an advantage? Absolutely. But it's the fact that we're together. I mean, that's what made the dream work from the beginning, and it's what's making it work today.
All right, then. That sounds like a very, very good response. You know, I mean, it seems like every part of this, you know, it succeeds because you two are together, and you know, two are better than one, I guess.
It is, and the thing is that can be difficult with that, and this is, you know, when Karen says, you know, it's always an ongoing evolution when you. Obviously, we're raising our kids together, and we are skiing together and training together and working together. And, you know, like it's this constant ebb and flow. And so there's I always tell people it's very dangerous to take the thing you love to do and then make it what you do for a living. But it is also the most rewarding part of that. Well, from a relationship, from a marriage standpoint, you know, there's a lot that comes along with the fact that you are working together and training together and competing together and doing all those things together. But again, when you get the balance right, you know, I feel like we have, you know, not to let the cat out of the bag, but I feel like we have it better than anybody else in the whole wide world when we get that opportunity to experience every part of our lives together. But yeah, that's, you know, but that evolution and that learning. And I mean, you know, there's probably a lot of mornings where Karen's getting up thinking, I don't want to go to work with this ding-a-ling.
Now you're right on one thing. You were certainly the mouthpiece in terms of the relationship. Now, what do you have to say in response to that? Come on.
About him being the mouthpiece?
Yeah.
or being the ding-a-ling.
Um, Well, I can't disagree. I mean, he's definitely the face of, I mean, you know, he's always been a, not afraid to speak his mind. And, you know, I'm a little bit more reserved and, you know, grew up a little more, maybe just a little more conservative or something. I don't know. I mean, it might just be the male female thing for the time that we grew up. And you know, I mean, we're a good fit. I mean, it's okay. I don't mind, I don't mind him being more outspoken, I guess, than me. I mean, if I have something to say, I'll kind of throw it out there, but you know, I mean, he does if I disagree, I'll speak up. I think he does a great job of conveying the message and, I mean, it's, I'm just feel fortunate to be able to, have had all these years together and to continue to see what we can do. And, I mean, it's been an amazing ride and, it's not over yet. as far as I know right now, sitting here today, and, I mean, I think it's just always fun to see what you can do together. So,
okay.
Okay, as begin to kind of wind up the podcast, we're over an hour and 30 minutes. getting close to 2 hours, close to 2 hours now, and it's just been intriguing just listening to both of you give your takes as to what you've done and what you're currently doing. But let's look a little bit in the future. What do you believe is going to occur? How do you see yourselves in 5 years' time?
This was such a... I knew you were going to ask this question, but... And oh, don't have...
Am I that predictable?
Yeah, you are.
Yeah. Oh, thank you.
I really don't have... I guess I don't really have a great answer for that. I mean... As far as skiing goes, I don't really know what to tell you, Tony. I mean, it's like, I wouldn't have thought I would have lasted this long. I guess it just depends on like what carrot is still hanging out there dangling in front of us. And, and if we still feel like we want to keep going. I mean, I know that certainly we are at a time where, our kids are changing so fast, so much and so fast. And I really want to be able to enjoy every second of that. That's really what my next 5 years looks like is my kids. I mean, I guess that's really probably the best answer I could give is that, I want to continue to try to be as healthy as we can, and be as happy as we can, not to be cliche, and it's just enjoy the time we have together, because I know there's some changes coming.
Indeed. And what's your contribution to the digital time capsule?
Well, I think I do think that as far as banging into ramps and how long you can do that, we don't know what that timetable is exactly. But I do think that there's, we've been in a transition period as a, as a sport and obviously as a couple within the sport. The kids are a huge dictator of that. I mean, in 5 years, Dash will be a freshman in college, right? So that'll be, something to deal with. And for our entire career, we've tried to sit down and lay out the plans. This is how we're going to, do it. And there's the old saying that if you want to hear God laugh, tell him your plans. And that's kind of what it always feels like is. So I think we have become very good at reacting to the environment around us as the climate changes, as you will. I do have, intentions over the next 5 years of continuing to grow our roles with the companies in the industry and try to keep building that. This is where we want to stay connected to. This is a sport that we love, not only as because of that we do it for a living, but it's, again, it's what our kids are enjoying doing. It's what we have been connected back to, our greatest memories as kids. And we want to see that keep going forward. So I want to continue to build that part of it. I think Andy Mapple spoke a lot of wisdom, and he said, he always wanted to leave the sport in a better condition than he found it. And that's I think that's, I know that was something that tore him up a little bit, was that it, he, you know, it wasn't better off than when he found it, kind of thing. And we've had to deal with that a little bit ourselves. But I guess what I would say is I want to make sure that we, you know, we want to keep the sport alive and keep it healthy and be a part of its continued progress for the generations to come. And so, you know, we want to stay connected to it.
Well, okay then. We'll wind that up. It's been an intriguing conversation with Freddy Krueger and Karen Truelove here on this episode of the TWBC podcast. Any parting words from either of you before we put a bow on this one?
I mean, it's been fun talking. I mean, it's been fun reminiscing. I appreciate, you know, you, what you guys are doing with the, of course, with the webcasting and then the podcast. You know, it's great to listen to what, you know, what the other skiers, you know, getting kind of a glimpse into their lives and also just helping, you know, helping us look back on, you know, our time together.
Yeah. You know, I would, you know, throw out there that, probably one thing we didn't maybe touch on enough is, you know, our family and friends and the, you know, mainly the family and how much our, like our parents on both sides have supported us. You know, we talk about, you know, there were times very difficult decisions made when the boys were young as babies where, you know, maybe there's a tournament in Ukraine or whatever, where we had to rely on the parents or, you know, they would come down to the Masters and, you know, here, can you take care of Dash or Ridge while, you know, we try and go out here and win this tournament. So, they've been an amazing part of, I mean, mm-hmm. really from, you know, start till still today. So we want to thank them for all their time and energy that they've put in and helped us be able to not only get to the upper echelon of the sport, but then be able to stay there and help us through all these years and difficult times and great times and everything in between.
Definitely.
All right, then. And that is the conclusion of this episode of the TWBC podcast. My name is Tony Lightfoot. And for Freddy Krueger and Karen Truelove, it is ciao for now.
Thank you for listening to the TWBC podcast. Be sure to check out our website at waterskibroadcasting.com. Links to our presence on major social media platforms can be found there, as well as updates to our webcast and this podcast. Duplication or rebroadcasting of this broadcast without written consent of TWBC is prohibited. Subscribe to us on your favorite podcast platform and be sure to join us next time for the next edition of the TWBC podcast.